Our last case for argument is Bilal versus BP America. Mr. Bilal.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Karis Bilal, the plaintiff and appellant. If it pleases the court, I am here to seek reversing the summary judgment that was entered and the costs that were granted to the defendants in the trial court. We're seeking to have this case remanded and also to have a trial set on a date and time certain. In our briefs, we laid out pretty much most of our arguments. The court's review here is de novo. That means that it gives really no deference to the trial court's findings. It does its own review of the record and looks for genuine issues of material fact. Our position is that the record is filled with genuine issues of material fact. And in the defendant's brief, they really focus on two points. Our position is that we have made a direct as well as an indirect burden of proof here. We've met that under McDonnell Douglas. They contest two prongs of the test. The second part is that Bilal was not satisfying BP's legitimate business expectations. And the fourth prong was that there were no other similarly situated employees. Those simply are incorrect statements of fact. The record is clear in that the expectations of BP were certainly being met. The value-added numbers of the plaintiff in this case exceeded the defendant's employees in the case. He had positive performance feedback from his clients. He received annual raises and bonuses throughout the time he was there. And the defendants in this case alleged that they lost his employment file up until the point when he was transferred to Mr. Dietz's group. We believe all of those things corroborate the fact that the plaintiff in this case has certainly met his proof. The two individuals that the plaintiff has pointed out, Ravi Rajagopal and Greg Klavanich, in interrogatory 11 and 17, the responses made by the defendants here, it clearly shows that Ravi, as well as Greg, Ravi is Asian, Greg is white, and both of them were tax attorneys. Both of them were paid more than the defendant, than the plaintiff in this case, and neither of them had their jobs terminated or had ever been placed on probation. In this case here, the facts are clear that Mr. Dietz made racist statements to Mr. Bilal. In fact, what he did, he told the plaintiff in this case that he wouldn't hire any of his kind, and that if it was left up to him, he wouldn't hire any African Americans. And he referred to the plaintiff as a boy. And then not only that, he said, after the plaintiff said that he was going to report what Mr. Dietz said, he said that he was going to destroy his black ass. All of this is in the record. And to date, the defendants have not come with any explanation as to what has happened here. As pretext, they raised three legitimate business reasons. They say they are downsizing. They allege that there were performance issues, which we've gone through a little bit. And then they also allege that the plaintiff in this case never returned from work after he received his short-term disability. That clearly has nothing to do with his performance. The fact of the matter is that he was not notified of any of these alleged statements until after he filed his lawsuit against the defendants in this case. The defendants take the position in their brief that the constitutional claims that were raised by the plaintiff have been waived. However, those constitutional claims would not even be recognized until the time when the district court granted summary judgment in favor of the defendants here. So it was impossible at that time to even understand that until after the motion for summary judgment was granted in favor of the defendants here. If we look at the claims that are being made here, the records clearly support everything here, and I would not want to rehash the entire record, but the record spells out exactly what happened in this case. Clearly, the plaintiff can meet all of his burdens here, In fact, if summary judgment were to be granted in any way, it would seem like it would be granted in favor of the plaintiff here with the record that we have before the court. And at this time, I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal and take whatever questions Your Honors have at this time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bilal. Mr. Piskorski?
May it please the Court, Thomas Piskorski on behalf of defendants, Appellees James Dietz and BP America. We're talking about the record. I think it's critical to understand Mr. Bilal in a district court had took three opportunities to try to respond to the undisputed statement of material facts. One was after the motion was filed. One was after briefing was completed. And a third was after summary judgment was entered. With respect to the first two responses before the summary judgment decision, the district court found noncompliance with Local Rule 56.1, and as a result, the defendant's statement of facts were deemed admitted, and his other information that he included in his pleading would not be considered. The district court's application of 56.1 was absolutely correct. Both the original and then the supplemental and amended responses simply didn't come close to meeting what 56.1 requires. Mr. Bilal makes some passing comments in his brief that the district court misapplied 56.1, but I don't see anything in the briefs or even today where the misapplication or error exists. With respect to the constitutional argument, that wasn't even made in the district court, and as recently as September in Burke's case by this court, the court rejected the kind of constitutional argument Mr. Bilal is making. The third crack at the apple that Mr. Bilal took was after summary judgment was entered. And there he submitted 42 new, most of them brand new, statement of facts. The district court said no. All this stuff you could have presented and should have presented in proper form before the summary judgment was decided. In fact, they gave you an extra crack at it and you still didn't do it. That third submission is literally a brand new submission. So Mr. Bilal wants to make this case a factually complicated one with a disputed record, but under 56.1, this is a very clean record for summary judgment purposes. On a similarly situated, Mr. Bilal named two people in his brief, very passing references, John Klavanich and Ravi Rajagopal. He names them, but he doesn't do anything more to show they were similarly situated. No evidence whatsoever that any of them had performance problems, had questions about their knowledge or depth of knowledge, absolutely nothing. Neither one was ever put on probation. Neither one received the kind of criticisms that Mr. Bilal received from colleagues who know that area of the work. So in assembly situated, the record is absolutely void of anything to show those two folks are just like Mr. Bilal. And he does ignore the two white individuals who were terminated at the same time for the same reasons by the same group as Mr. Bilal. In terms of meeting expectations, the uncontradicted evidence is that Lewandowski, Carriato, and Stolberg, they all communicated to Mr. Dietz concerns about Mr. Bilal's performance and the depth and level of his knowledge. No contradiction that that's what they told him. Stolberg actually writes a stinging email. It's in the record at R51, tab 1, exhibit 2, bringing to Dietz a litany of problems that Stolberg, an experienced tax attorney at BP, found with Mr. Bilal's performance. Now, Mr. Bilal may disagree with what Lewandowski and Carriato and Stolberg and Dietz thought, but he does not contradict the fact that those individuals were telling Dietz these things and raising these concerns. With respect to the statement by Mr. Dietz, or the alleged statements, but for purposes of summary judgment, we'll assume they were made, that they fail on a couple levels. The first one, as the district court found, they were remote in time to the decision. The statement was allegedly made on May 29, 2001. The decision to release Mr. Bilal was made 13 months later, or 14 months later, in July 2002. Likewise, it's unrelated to the termination decision process. That process occurred in July of 2002 by the tax management group, consisting of eight people. Mr. Dietz was one of them. And they basically did a talent review, a personnel review of people they had in their groups. As a result of their records and long-term career expectations, they concluded Mr. Bilal, along with two white individuals, Kudelek and two white individuals would also be let go for the same reasons, by the same group, at the same time. All of them were given ample time, which is quite fair. Try to find another job. You'll be around till the end of the year, but we're going to be releasing you. Also, with respect to the deed statements, there are events before and after that I think have to be considered in that context. Before the statement, there was a March 7, 2001 performance review showing performance problems. Carriato and Lewandowski had come to Dietz with performance issues. Stolberg wrote her stinging memo. Those are important things in the context of the ultimate reason why Mr. Bilal was let go. Even afterwards, Mr. Dietz worked with Mr. Bilal, met with him on a regular basis, took him off probation. So his performance was fine enough to stay on, hardly evidence of somebody out to get him. And then in early 2002, another review, a fair review showing some improvement, some continued problems. But again, in July of 2002, when the group is looking at talent, they're basically saying, these folks don't have a long-term career here. The district court properly applied 56.1. That's the factual record that the district court had and properly is before this court. Whatever the reason, and regardless of the reason, Mr. Bilal didn't comply with it. He doesn't like the record for summary judgment, but that is the record. And the district court's legal conclusions based on that record are right on. They're absolutely correct. We ask for affirmance. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Piskorski. Mr. Bilal, how much time does he have? 5 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honors. A few points. The defendants claim that Mr. Dietz made these decisions. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Dietz was at the meeting in Seattle, as counsel just alluded to, but not only that, he was asked at that meeting, and this is in Mr. Dietz's own deposition, he was asked at the meeting who he thought would fill this position or who he thought would be a good candidate to be fired. He selected the plaintiff in this case. So that clearly distinguishes this from a lot of other cases here. Mr. Dietz made the decision. He selected this. And 1 week after, the statements were made, he places the plaintiff on probation. He changes his unit that he was representing. He went from pipeline to global refinery financing. But the matter of the fact is he didn't change any of his duties. He still provided the same tax advice on multi-million dollar deals. And it's inconceivable that someone that's incompetent in tax would be allowed to take on projects like that where you're talking about millions of dollars at stake and be the lead tax contact. Not only that, the individuals that he claimed were let go, Fred D'Amato and Kutilic, Fred D'Amato was leaving for his own reasons, and so was Kutilic. Fred D'Amato was leaving because he lived in Wisconsin. And he told me that he was actually going to be leaving the company anyway because the commute was like 2 hours plus getting back and forth. So he told me he was going to leave anyway. These are all the issues that will come out at trial. And this is where these issues should be tried, in front of a jury. They shouldn't be disposed of in a summary judgment motion. The review by Dietz was subjective. In his own deposition transcript, when he was asked, does he have any objective material he could point to, he couldn't point to one objective thing, not one. Not only that, when we look at the individuals that are alleged to have said something now, these individuals, as in Larry Lewandowski's testimony, he stated that Mr. Dietz came to him. Mr. Dietz came to Larry Lewandowski and said, listen, I think we're going to have litigation here by Kara, so what do you have that can help us? What can you say to help us out here? Mr. Dietz came to him and solicited those responses for this lawsuit. That's what the record of evidence shows. And all of the things that were stated in our supplemental and amended response filed on December 15, 2005 points directly in the record to where all these things are, direct cites to the record, where all these facts are. We're talking about downsizing. We're talking about, okay, we can't do that, so let's say it's work performance.
Well, we can't say it's really work performance because he has all these positive feedbacks from his clients. Now, keep in mind, these were so-called colleagues of mine that made these statements. These were not people that I represented, my clients. My clients, they all had great things to say about me. He's extremely prompt. He's giving great information. He's doing all the right things. But after I file a lawsuit, I have all these individuals now saying, well, we had problems with these things. Never heard about them while I was at BP. Never heard about any of this stuff. All of this came out during litigation, which is expected. And that's more of a reason why you go in front of a jury and you have a jury look at these facts and determine them. None of these things were hashed out or even brought up or even given me a chance to come in and say, well, no, that's not true, and here's why. Never given the opportunity. And the reason why is because it didn't happen. And not only that, if you look at the Seattle meeting, the record is clear. There are no notes from that meeting, no memorandum, there's nothing. You mean to tell me that it's even reasonable to believe that they had this meeting in Seattle, but there's not one record showing you going to get rid of an attorney? Not one record anywhere showing this. It's not believable. All inferences, all doubts should be to the plaintiff in this case, the non-moving party. And they talk about the non-compliance with Rule 56.1. Simply not true. Pointed directly to the record, to where all these facts, genuine issues of material fact can be found, showed where all of them can be found. They haven't contested any of these to date. And the reason why is because they cannot. That's the reason why. And I'd just like to close with saying this. The record is clear in this case. It's clear. It's clear what happened here. And I'd just like to quote what President John F. Kennedy said. He said these words, and I quote, "We are confronted primarily with a moral issue here. It is one that is old as the scriptures and as clear as the American Constitution. The heart of the question is whether all Americans are to be afforded equal rights and equal opportunities under the Constitution. Those who do nothing are inviting shame, as well as violence. Those who act boldly are recognizing right as well as reality," unquote. I trust and believe that this honorable court will look at the facts here, do a de novo review, look at the record here, and act boldly and send this case back for what the Constitution guarantees, a trial by jury to determine the many genuine issues of material fact in this case. I thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Bilal and Mr. Jaworski. And the court will stand in recess.